When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, At Home with the Lalas, or rather in our closet, because that's where we currently are. We are in lockdown still. This is our third episode. We had our first one with the wonderful Rose McGowan, and we had Big Nasty on last week, which I thoroughly enjoyed, especially his fantastic batch of CBD oil, which has made me sleep 12 hours. But guys, yeah, welcome back to our episode. And today we have a wonderful guest on,
Joanne Froggatt. And for those of you that don't know, she's an incredible actress. She's a Golden Globe winning actress, a SAG Award winning actress. You might know her for her role as Mrs. Bates in Downton Abbey or Laura in Liar, which is gracing our TVs at the moment. And we had one of the best chats with her.
Yeah, we just had so much fun. And we, first of all, it gets a bit naughty, which I love. And she's certainly very witty character in real life.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful and sweet human. And she had some really interesting things to say. And I think one of the things that really stood out for me, I don't know about you in the interview, was just the fact that she talked about the internet and talked about trolling and talked about what it's like to be in lockdown and to get comments on your Instagram.
I think one of the reasons why this is such an important topic at the moment is because in lockdown, the virtual realms, whether it be social media, whether it be the blogs, Daily Mail, Metro, whatever it is becoming more important to everyone because we can't have face-to-face interactions with people. Those people that wouldn't avidly check social media or interact through those means, it's become more normal for them to do so. So I think we do need to talk about how to deal with the inevitable trolling, people disagreeing with what you're saying, or just at a very basic level, some judgment that happens through little pictures of your life.
Absolutely. Also, I think it's much harder for anyone to come up with any content. And so people sort of resort to coming up with old content. I've definitely posted some Throwback Thursdays, which is a thing on Instagram. But also, there's something that really interests me, Laura. You mentioned that a while ago. You came up, you probably didn't come up with the term, but you told me there's something called sad fishing.
Yeah.
What is sad fishing?
So sad fishing is a term, and I think these terms come with larger trends of how people are dealing with certain things at a time. So sad fishing is similar in terminology to catfishing, but what it actually means is making your life or circumstance to appear worse or to create a situation that will make people feel sorry for you, that you benefit from their sympathy. So one of the famous examples of sad fishing is through Kendall Jenner when she was launching a beauty line, and she created a really sad story and off the back of that was trying to sell her beauty line. Social media is actually a great space in some respects to share maybe things that you are going through and make other people know that it's okay if you're going through certain things. I think the main part of this is if you benefit off the back of it.
Well, financially anyways, but also I have to say,
emotionally as well, actually. No.
Probably. I mean, you know, fishing for likes, that kind of thing. I'm completely somewhat understanding for that. And I also have to say that I have read posts that may be may fall under that category that have personally helped me and that have inspired me. I think I read a post the other day from a wonderful man called Jules, and he said, you know, right now you may have gained a little bit of weight, you may not be exactly where you want to be, but you're alive, and that's already really good. I needed to hear that that day.
Well, that's what I was saying. There's no hard and fast rule to say that you can't post something that is emotive, that is sharing your hardships or anything like that. That's not the bad part of what sad fishing is. It's people seeing that genuine posts like that are getting reactions and getting interactions from people, creating a situation that may not be there. And then it's actually losing credibility to the people that are actually going through like that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, the internet or any kind of social media has always been, it's never the real world, really, is it? But I will say that for me, at the moment especially, I have to be, I don't know about you, I have to be really careful who I follow and who I look at, because it can really change my mood very quickly, and I have a lot more time on my hands where I'm usually very strict with how often I check my Instagram. I've even gone as far as deleting my Instagram in the morning and reinstating it in the evening. And then a friend of mine once suggested to just use an old phone to, like an old phone that you haven't used in, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah,
and put your Instagram on there. And I think they're self-care ways of of how you deal with it. And that was quite interesting with Jo, because we asked her that and she had some interesting things to say. Some really funny things to say. So you'll hear that in a minute. But what do you do to protect yourself, if you will? Because I know we check our social media a lot more than we normally do, don't we?
I have to be really honest here. You know, I am on social media a lot, and it does sometimes bring me anxiety seeing certain people. It does sometimes make me feel bad about myself, or that I'm not doing enough, or that it does make me compare people in an unfair way to myself, because on one level, I understand the construction of posts. Everyone does it.
Of course.
I understand that it's not a reflection of their actual life. It's a highlight reel, if you will.
Yeah, it's like an acting show reel, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. So there's no delusions in my mind that I think this is how successful people are or how people are doing. But on another level, I'm like, oh, okay, well, why didn't I think of that? And you can't do everything. And I have to keep telling myself that. For me, what I have really done is mute the accounts that are not making me feel good. The reason why I say mute is it's not because I don't want the people in my life. And people do have these follow-ups where they know when you delete them. And it is an offensive thing. I have it. And I've had people delete me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you something. You have this app. We've talked about this before, that lets you know when someone follows you. Is that right?
Well, no, it's when someone unfollows you. And you can look at it and you can see
it. How do you think that makes you feel? Do you think that's a positive thing? Do you think it's a good thing to know? I don't have it for no reason.
It's completely immature and childish.
Because
I look at it and I was like, oh, you unfollowed me? Ah, honey, I'm going to unfollow you.
Thank you for being honest.
And it's childish and I should delete it. But I don't know if it's my ego. I don't know what it is. But I check it regularly.
I think it's great to admit to it. And I will admit to
so I know if you're unfollowing me, people.
Exactly. Here is Joanne Froggatt, and we are so, 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 so happy to have her on.
We love you, Jo. Hi, Jo. How are you?
Hi, darling.
I'm very well, thanks, ladies. How are you both?
We are both okay. We are in a hot closet, as mentioned. It's a little bit strange. Where are you and how are you?
I am at home in Buckinghamshire and I'm fine. I've been like, today has been a good day. Feeling quite positive and productive today. Some days not so positive and productive like everyone else. Some days I'm like, just going to sit and watch movies in my pajamas. But I'm having a really good day today. Yeah.
Have you had the pajama days already?
Yes, I did have a pyjama day yesterday. Thank goodness, not as many as I was expecting. So I have had the odd pyjama day and just thought, yeah, you know what? It's fine. I'm allowed. It's okay. I'm allowed to have a day, you know, where I just don't feel like doing much and I just do some admin and watch some movies, and maybe I was a little bit hungover. So that was
that's a
joke. So I had a party Zoom with some friends on a Saturday night. So
for all of our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about your lockdown process, how you got to Buckinghamshire and where you've kind of been at throughout the whole entire COVID experience?
Yeah, so to start with, like everyone, it was quite an adjustment, wasn't it? You know, I think it was just the sort of fear of what was happening and how long we were going to be in this situation for, and, you know, how our NHS were going to cope. And it was just all this unknown, wasn't it? And this sort of fear of, and obviously fear for the more vulnerable people that I love. And, you know, so it definitely threw up some extra challenges, but which it has done for everyone. You know, everyone's concerned about the same things. They, you know, they obviously concerned mainly firstly about the health of their loved ones, and, you know, and secondly is, you know, finances and all of these sort of extra things that have, you know, made this time a little bit more concerning. But yeah, sort of definitely had a few days of coming to terms with it all and thinking, what do I do? Like, how do I use my time now? And sort of that adjustment to kind of going, okay, what will, having to sort of rethink my whole day-to-day life kind of thing. After a couple of weeks, I've just really got into the flow of it. So I've done a lot of talking to friends on Zoom and family, and that has been amazing. The last few weeks I've got back into doing exercise, which has made me feel so much better.
Great.
Yeah, and just I've started cooking again, which I'm not very good at, but I'm getting better at it. Yeah, so that's definitely weird. Some positives.
In a really strange twist, during this whole lockdown, you've actually been on our televisions, which is really weird. Because
it is kind of weird. So even though I've not been out, I have been in everyone's homes or millions of people's homes.
Found that really strange, because we have been on a Zoom call together, and that night you were also my other half was watching you on TV. So yeah, how have people reacted to that, would you say?
Well, it's been great. The show that you're talking about that's been on recently is I've always enjoyed being open and looking at people's reactions to the show, because obviously it's sort of, you know, it's very sensitive subject matter, and it sort of threw up a lot of questions. And so I've really enjoyed seeing what people or how people have responded to it. And even more so in this lockdown period, because it's been lovely to sort of see. I don't sort of look at social media at the time when programs that I'm in are airing mostly, but with Liar I do, because it always has a reaction. I can sort of tell how people are responding to it. So and it's been great to be able to sort of read comments from people saying that you know, they've really enjoyed the show, it's kept them on the edge of their seat, they've been really looking forward to it, it was the highlight of their week, and that's been lovely.
Do you respond on socials as well when they are asking you questions about the show, or is it a bit more just as a comment zone?
Yeah, no, I do reply. I do. I mean, I reply very occasionally. I often like things, so people know I've sort of read it and responded. I have a rule. I don't reply to anything negative, just because I just don't feel like it's worth spending the energy entering into a sort of negative conversation with somebody that I've never met. And everyone's entitled to their opinions. So yeah, I, as a rule, I don't, you know, get into politics, religion, or negativity on social media.
It's called keyboard warriors, isn't it? The people that are very brave on the keyboard, but if you see them, they probably wouldn't be saying the same thing.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, like, I've occasionally had the odd negative comment that has really made me laugh out loud. So it's not like it's always hurtful. Sometimes I'm kind of like, okay, you've got a fair point, but I can't respond to that.
Can you tell us a comment that you would have, like, traditionally laughed at?
I can tell you one. So I remember one time there was when Downton was on, and the press department had asked me to do a sort of a live tweet during one of the episodes. And because my character, Anna Bates, was a really nice character and most people loved her, and, you know, she was sort of a very warm character. I was sort of getting all these comments through saying, oh, we love Anna. Oh, we love you. We just love her. Oh, she's amazing. Which was all lovely and gorgeous. And I was just getting sort of reams of these lovely comments. And then all of a sudden this one person just put, at Joe Frogger, fuck you. And I kind of thought, well, fair play. I might be sick of going. But it did. It made me laugh out loud so much that I nearly retweeted it. And I was like, no, I can't do that. And then it just like carried on again.
That's so good, actually.
I know it is. You've got to admit, comedy timing, I have to give it, whoever that person was, full marks for comedy timing, because it did make me laugh out loud.
I think that just made my day. I feel like every day I need something so outrageous, whether it is in the news or so, that just makes me go, what the F? Do you feel the same way, Jo?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And, you know, sort of all those, all those sort of like silly videos and bits and pieces that people send around, and sort of like funny videos and memes and all the rest of it. And some of them you sort of get a bit overloaded with, but sometimes there's the odd one and you're just like, oh, thank you for that. That just made my day. That just set my day up so in the perfect way.
We would love to know what you do, because we haven't figured it out. So we are asking our guests, how do you keep a routine? Because we are really struggling with it. That is something that Lara and I talk about a lot. We're trying. I think we're getting better at it. And then we go like a couple of steps forward and then 10,000 steps back. Do you keep a routine? Because I know often for set you get up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., you go into makeup, you have your day set up, you know where you're going to be. This is probably a very new world for you, because you've been working nonstop for a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, like you ladies, you know, I don't have a lot of routine in my life anyway. I do for like set periods of time, like you say, when you're doing a specific job or you're on one job for like a few months, then you're very much in a routine, and then it stops and you finish that job and then you're just like, oh, okay, it's just me again, and what am I doing and what do I need to do with my day? So I think that's kind of helped in a way, that I just my routine is constantly changing. So, but I haven't sort of forced myself into doing anything or getting up at a certain time. I've just sort of naturally fallen into a routine of, I don't go to sleep very early, I have to say. I probably go to sleep between like 1 and 2 a.m.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just don't want to sleep early. And then I usually get up between like 8 and 9. And that just seems to naturally be what my body clock wants to do at the moment. And then I'll sit and have a coffee, call the family, do a few emails, do a bit of exercise. By that time, might be time to have some lunch or eat something else, because I haven't eaten anything for 10 minutes. Surely it's time to eat again, surely. Have a shower and then, you know, sort of see what sort of work bits and pieces I need to do and other stuff. So, yeah, so I kind of like got a bit of a routine to the first half of my day. And then the second half of the day, I'm trying to go with what I feel like doing a little bit.
Rolling on from routines, because you actually just came back from Australia, didn't you?
Which is her home country.
Which is where I'm from. So I'm really excited, firstly, to hear what you thought about it. Secondly, to know whether you're jet lagged and trying to restructure your routine because of that as well.
No, I've been back for a few months, so luckily I'm over the jet lag, it's quite full on, that jet lag. But I love it. Whereabouts in Australia are you from, Lara?
Sydney.
Oh my God, it's my favourite place. I just love Australia. I did a job there when I was 25, 26, and I did an acting job there, which was 2 months, and then I was sort of free and single at the time, so I stayed and went traveling, so did the backpacking thing, and oh my God, I just fell in love with Australia. I just loved it. The country is just so, the landscape's so diverse, and it's just so beautiful. I've always found it a really welcoming, friendly place to be, and I do love Sydney. So I was based in Sydney that time, and then I was filming there this year for sort of 4 months, and based in Sydney again. And yeah, I just love it.
One thing I've wanted to ask you for a really long time is, I love Downton Abbey and I love your character in it. And as everybody else, except that very fancy person who tweeted you, which is such a good tweet, something right now, people are locked in their houses. A lot of people are locked in their houses with people they probably shouldn't be locked in their houses. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I wanted to discuss with you, because you won a Golden Globe for your portrayal in season 4, I believe it was.
Yes.
And you held a heartbreaking, beautiful, warming speech that literally brought me to tears again when I rewatched it, and I hadn't watched it in a little while. And you mentioned that people had written to you about rape and you heard them. And to me, it was so moving. I wonder what gave you the courage to go up in front of all of Hollywood and say that.
I mean, I think, I haven't rewatched my speech, so I can't rewatch anything that I'm myself in, because I just find it too awkward to watch. But I did know at the time I got everything out that I wanted to say. And it was a few years ago, so this was like before the Me Too movement and all of that had happened. And it was the biggest shock of my life. It was one of the biggest shocks of my life to win that night. I had absolutely no idea. I was really relaxed, thinking, oh, my category was announced, I knew, quite early on in the evening. I think it's like the third category or something. And I was saying, oh, that's great, because we can just get it out of the way and enjoy the night and just enjoy the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, and I think when they announced my name, I clapped, which I don't think you can see. I clapped for about 10 seconds. Because I didn't realise it was my name. And then I was like, oh my God, they said my name. And my mind just went completely blank. And I was just like, I've just got to go to the stage. And so my speech came from, I'd received a small number of letters from women, they all happened to be women, who were survivors of rape and sexual assault. And when I received this particular letter, I'd finished doing all the press for that series of Downton, and but this one lady sent me a letter that said she was very candid about explaining what she'd been through, and she also said, you know, it's not just Anna and, you know, women in that time period that aren't believed, we are still not believed or still don't feel able to come forward. And she wrote in the letter, she didn't know why she was writing to me really, but she supposed in some way she just wanted to feel heard. And that just, I get emotional just repeating it, that just really hit me and stuck with me. And I thought to myself, oh, if ever I am talking about this series again in a public way, I would like to acknowledge that I heard her and that hopefully that means other people hear her. However, I never imagined in a million years it would be doing a speech accepting a Golden Globe. I really was not expecting it to be that moment. But it's a strange thing. You just sort of, it was a long, I remember it being a very long walk to the stage. Just me, my brain going, just get to the stage. And then I think I was so overwhelmed and just about managed to keep it together. And I did manage to say, you know, what this lady had written to me in her letter. And I just said, you know, I just want you to know that I heard you. And I hope saying this so publicly means that you feel the world has heard you. And it was just something that genuinely came from the heart and something I'd wanted to say for a long time. And that was my opportunity to say it.
That is so beautiful. I was just tearing up watching you.
We both are. And we actually watched it this morning. So I'm actually going to put a link up on it at some point. You don't have to watch it, but...
No, I'm not going to watch it again.
Because I wanted to ask something on that. And I think that actors always get asked about getting into a role. I wanted to know, with you've had some really hefty roles. Downton Abbey is a period piece. It had layers and layers of personas and meanings. I wanted to know how you get out of a role after going through years of kind of carrying this character with you. Do you have a process that you go through?
I guess I don't know whether I have a set process, but I mean, Anna was a pretty nice character to sit with for, you know, 6 seasons on and off, because she, you know, although she did go through some pretty dramatic storylines, there were times where she was happy and it was a nice sort of person to sit with in your head. I do get sort of quite involved in my characters, like I dream about them often, I dream about work, but I think a lot of people do, because when you're spending most of your waking hours at work, it's what's on your mind. So I think that's, you know, when you dream, you're processing your day, aren't you? So I think that's pretty normal. But I think for me, I just try and I sort of consciously do when I take my costume off at the end of the day, I don't go through a whole, you know, routine with it, but I do kind of think every time, oh, okay, right, she's off, she stays there until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or definitely at the end of the week, I think I get quite giddy towards a Friday night because I'm just sort of like, yay, I'm me again. And it's all, you know, I just like to sort of laugh, I guess. And sort of in the times where you do, like, we do have time to sort of enjoy being around the people you're working with and have fun with them, I just make the most of those moments. And then the moments where we have to be really concentrated and serious, obviously, you know, that's what we need to do. So,
well, I loved Alice Always, as you know. That was your, was it actually your first huge theater production?
Or no, I don't know where that's come from, though. It was my first, no, it was about,
because that's what it's online. That's so not true.
I think it was on the internet somewhere, but that's not true. No.
Exactly. It didn't seem like it, but I went to see it. I loved it. I wouldn't say you portrayed the nicest of characters.
No, seriously.
You portrayed someone quite manipulative and quite interesting, and it must have been so much fun because you looked like you had a blast. Is that true?
I absolutely loved doing that job. So Lucinda Coxon has written, had adapted the play from a book of the same name, and I've always been a big fan of Lucinda's writing, and Sir Nicholas Heitner directed, and I've always been a huge fan of his. And it was, you know, when I sort of got the role, like, it was a no-brainer. I was like, wow, this is just a dream, my dream theatre job at the Bridge Theatre, and it's a wonderful place to work as well. But the character was just so much fun because she starts off with this, as this sort of very mousy, ignored, quiet person, and then she sort of learns how to manipulate the people around her and her surroundings to get what she wants. And oh my goodness, those are the most fun characters to play, aren't they? They're just like the manipulative, because it's just like completely opposite to me. So I love it. I loved it when sort of towards the end of the show, you could hear people sort of go,
Yeah, I haven't seen that side of you. And, you know, talking about the Me Too era, there couldn't have been a stronger character, really, to go, well, let me tell you how it works, right?
Yeah, it's like, absolutely. This was sort of a story of a woman really taking charge of her own destiny in a sort of morally questionable way. But she was the one that was sort of abusing the people in power, not the opposite way around. So she didn't have the power, but she manipulated people until she did. So it was quite it was great fun to do.
Yeah, it looked like it was fun, and I just remember you coming out with this glow because it's a fun role to play. Yeah. Jo, unfortunately we've almost run out of time, and that is so weird.
It is. But a couple of things just before we go.
Yes.
If you could give any advice to our listeners that might be feeling a little bit lonely right now, might be feeling a little bit stuck in a rut, and at the end of the lockdown and COVID is seeming really, really far away. If you were to give them a piece of advice, what would that be?
I mean, my bit of advice would be that we're all in the same place. So I think, don't think that everyone else has or anyone else has the answers. I think, you know, just know that even if you see these, you know, somebody seemingly having a perfect time on social media or all of that, everyone is going through their own struggles, and what you're going through is normal. Mm. And we're all going through our own version of it. And just remember, I think how I'm dealing with it is just remembering to keep in contact with the people I love. And that is the thing that is just making me feel positive every day.
And also, what would be your first thing you're going to do when you leave the lockdown?
Oh my goodness, the first thing I'm going to do when I leave the lockdown, oh my goodness, it would definitely just see people I love. I'll just be running to the closest person to me and giving them a big hug.
Joe Froggatt is giving out free hugs. Yeah. It's the lockdown. Everybody get in line.
Exactly. Joe, one last thing. You know, we, Lara and I, work a lot with charities, especially grassroots charities. And that's a big, big part of our lives. And it's a big part of this podcast. And we have asked you to name a charity you'd like us to contribute to, and you have chosen Because I Am a Girl campaign. Could you tell us a tiny bit about it?
Yes, so I'm an ambassador for Because I'm a Girl campaign, and that's with a charity called Plan International, who sponsor children in developing countries. I've sponsored a child with Plan for, goodness, the last 17 years.
Wow.
So I've been, you know, personally involved as well as more publicly. And they asked me to come on board specifically with this particular offshoot campaign because it's always girls' rights that suffer most in developing countries in times of extreme need. So whether that be wartime or in times of a pandemic. So it's just focusing on keeping girls as safe as possible in as many countries as possible.
What a wonderful thing to do. We will contact them and we will contribute to them.
Thank
you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, I am so deeply moved and grateful that you agreed to do this.
Ladies.
It's just been absolutely wonderful. And you know what? I can't wait for big hugs in beer gardens.
Exactly.
I hope it won't be too long.
Thank you so much, Joe, for that fantastic interview. The whole thing just made me smile.
It made me smile too. And we're going to put up a video as well on our Instagram because, of course, we had to do it via Skype because we wanted to see her.
Well, via video Skype.
Exactly.
She looked gorgeous.
Yeah, she looked gorgeous. She seems great. And, you know, considering the fact that she's in lockdown, she's doing really, really, really well. Joe also talked about some of her favourite things and charities. And we are going to put up a link to that. So please tune in next week. We have a brand new episode with a fantabulous guest.
Yes, can't wait.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.